a lot of the improvement problems fall on the community.
You know, rusty old man, what are you doing in your basement over there? Ha ha.
Magic players tend toward the negative knee-jerk reaction.
I'm so glad they did not put a jumpstart card on a counterspell.
This is always the issue that R&D's got.
Could be the next smuggler's copter and have to be banned immediately.
I decided to drink my body weight in bourbon.
Spiraling downward at one point and just shouting at the screen.
It's conspiracy all the way for me.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to what promises to be a strange, but we hope ultimately rewarding edition of Dry Hearts. I'm Sean Seacrease. He's Brian Tibbetts, and he weighs a little less in cardboard than he did a week ago. He's Matt Hurley. The story will be unfolded as we continue this episode of Dry Hearts. Guys, what are you drinking this week? For me, I had a delivery from the Beer Angel. It's been well documented on the cast. The girl has a co-worker who has to go to Wisconsin every now and again. And so the case of New Glarus Oktoberfest showed up on the back porch today. That's what I've got. Matt, I know you had a tough weekend. Are you celebrating or recovering?
Still recovering. Some really bad, we'll go into it later, but some really bad stuff happened Saturday morning. And we had a fancy benefit Saturday night. Because of what happened Saturday morning, I drank way too much. And I may have to set up a GoFundMe to replace the money I lost on Saturday.
More on that coming when we get to what magic we played this week. Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
Two things. I just finished off the last of the Founders Autumn Ale, which was this great little like wet hopped, fantastic kind of bridge between summer and fall beer, which I had never had before, which was really, really good. And then right now I'm going with the Abita Amber, kind of ushering in the fall, a little bit heavier than the Oktoberfest, but delicious.
Abita is known for a couple of different things. One of them is they apparently have some kind of different water source than a lot of breweries. I know you brew your own beer. Could you taste that? Is that one of the things, or is it just delicious?
I would go with the latter. It's just delicious. I do know that water is extremely important, obviously, in beer, because it's kind of like with coffee or anything that's, you know, 95% whatever you're making. The source is important. So if you've got the right pH, or if you've got the right kind of alkaline level, all that kind of stuff, they've probably just perfected this beer, this amber ale, and it's so good. It kind of drinks a little bit like a lager. It's just that smooth crispness to it. So yeah, it's probably something to do with the water.
The water actually does make a big difference. Totally. That's actually a big reason a lot of the bourbon is made down here, because there's a big limestone shelf that acts as a natural filter. There's a couple of the brewery tours. It's really cool because they actually have, like, I guess you would call them sister distilleries that will make bourbon from different water sources. And that almost use the exact same mash bill, and you can taste a huge difference between the two. And it has a lot to do with the weather as well.
And for those who don't speak fluid, Brian, that was crispness and not Christmas. It kind of sounded a little bit the same when it came out.
Thank you for clearing that up.
I'm just cleaning up, as usual, here on Try Hards.
Good job on this thing.
What magic did you play this week? We've got one long story to detail here, so let's start somewhere else. Brian, did you get to play any magic this week?
No, I did not. And nor did I tune into either of the GPs that were, what were they, limited? A couple guys went from the shop, went down to play in a sealed PPTQ where 9 people showed up to the sealed PPTQ. So there was a lot of inbreeding. Nobody made top 4. There was a story of somebody almost cheating and getting disqualified. Not from our group, but somebody who's played at the shop a lot kind of has a reputation, let's say. So hopefully everything's gonna remain on the up and up going forward.
That's ballsy when you've got 9 people and you're trying to pull some shenanigans. All right, hopefully that situation was handled well. For myself, after things cooled off on Saturday night, finished everything up, the girl was out of town, I sat down on Arena, did a couple of drafts. They were 2 of the worst drafts of my magic career, and I have no problem saying that. The first one ended up with like a half Demir, half is it sort of Frankenstein's monster. It was not good. How I went 2-2, I'll never know. And on the second one, I wanted to really explore the Is It Guild. I'd heard a lot of good things about it. And so I got a couple of good Is It picks, a couple of medium Is It picks, thinking I'll just, like you do, round this out in pack 3. I had no blue or red cards at any point
in pack three. I don't mean the pack opened. I mean the packs that were all passed to me. Now, I understand that it is a popular guild to draft, so some of the cards are taken out of those. But I was beside myself. I never saw a blue or a red card in the entirety of the pack three draft. So that deck ended up, as you would imagine, being short on playables, and that didn't go very well either. So not a very feel-good situation. But this set is an enormous amount of fun to draft. I really like the draft environment, and I'm looking forward to playing it some more. Matt, I know you had a wild and woolly tale of Magic. It has a bit of woe, a bit of drunkenness, and even a bit of conquest, because you had a really full weekend.
To begin my Magic, I streamed, and I hope that some of the viewers got to pop in. I'm trying to get back onto a normal streaming schedule. The new bug deck is kind of forcing me to do that so I can get used to it. Friday night, found out girlfriend had to work really late, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to put this deck together. I was missing some new cards, some stuff, so I went down to the shop, built this bug deck. Spent, I don't know, I think it was $175 on cards, which I hate doing. So I completed it out, took it out there, and in five rounds, I went 3-1-1 for fifth place, I believe it was. The deck ran fantastic. Somehow I drew in game three against Storm. That was where my draw came from. Yeah, game two, which was our longest game, he cast four grape shots. And the vast majority of the time it was to kill my Goyfs or kill something that was on the board so he wouldn't die next turn. Got back home really late because we started late and it was just a big fiasco. Got home like 12:30, carried my bags inside, my backpack. Got up Saturday morning. We got up early. We went to the community garden for our kind of cleanup. We got a cold snap down here, so we were doing final harvest cleanup, getting everything done for the winter. Got back early in the morning, like 8 o'clock. We were filthy. Started carrying all the gardening stuff inside. Ran everything out for our kind of errands that next morning, which included my Magic backpack because I was thinking about playing Modern at 1. My work backpack and then a bag full of stuff that we were taking back to the mall or like my iPad was in. Or I had to go to the Genius Bar. Come back out a couple hours later. I get in my car and I notice my glove compartment's empty. And I look in backseat and all three bags are gone. Of course, I'm freaking out because there's a $4,500 Modern deck. And that's luckily that was the only thing in that bag was a Tryhards playmat, a $4,500 Modern deck, and then a Draft Chaff. Come to find out, I was looking at my back seat there and I had a coat that was stuck in the hinge and so my door didn't fully shut and that's why it didn't lock. And so somebody, I guess that morning was out and about trying locks and they found one that was unlocked. So it was bye-bye work backpack with my laptop and some other stuff in it and bye-bye Magic backpack and bye-bye bag full of stuff to return to the mall. So that destroyed my day naturally. We had a big benefit banquet for Big Brother Rick's sister Saturday night. I decided to drink my body weight in bourbon because it was, you know, all you could eat, all you could drink. Succeeded at that, so didn't get anything done yesterday because I was all hungover. Today, had to deal with the work nonsense and the, you know, all the insurance claims, and I'm still dealing with that. So that was my up and down where I had a ton of fun playing the deck, and then it got swiped. It really, really hurt.
Matt, there is something that you left out when you were texting Brian and I, and thank you for sharing as your weekend went on. We're here for you no matter what. That was a charity Big Brothers Big Sisters event you got just angry smashed at. Like, first of all, congratulations to you for being part of your community. Secondly, that was probably not the place to get Hurley angry drunk at.
Oh, no. This was exactly, so they had a dinner with a banquet, and that was the first half of the night. The second half was the late night with a DJ. So that turned into the everyone was angry drunk there. So it was being enabled by people that I had just met. Seemed like that was the thing to do. But yes, I succeeded in my goal.
Brian, I guess charity is just different in the South.
Yeah. Well, charity with Hurley, I think, is different just in general.
Yes, it is.
But no, I as soon as you texted that, my heart just kind of broke because, yes, it's cardboard. Yes, it's a game. Of course, there's money wrapped up into it, but it, just the violation you feel when somebody, you know, takes something that's not yours, you just kind of like the how dare you, you know, side of that. That just doesn't go away overnight. So that's just really, really awful. And I'm sorry to hear that happened. I I was taken back to a SCG event, St. Louis, Sean, what do I want to say, 2010, 2011, maybe?
I was going to say 2010.
I think that's right. I was playing Painter Grindstone. It wasn't Imperial Recruiter tricked out or anything like that, but it was, you know, dual lands. It was kind of a white-blue, I want to say. You know, had dual lands, had the Grindstones, had the Painter's Servants, a bunch of other, you know, artifacts that were high at that point. I remember finishing my match with a reanimator player. I had won. I left it on the, I just kind of turned around for a second, probably just left the deck in the deck box on my play mat, was talking to somebody who was like, hey, good match. Turned around and it was gone. And I was kind of thinking, well, that's odd. It's not like I wasn't away from it for a long time. And I went to Sean and I remember this vividly. He had a match with Cedric Phillips at that point. Do you remember that, Sean? I came over and I was like, did you take my deck? He's like, why the hell would I have taken your deck? Just kind of panicked at that point, kind of like, what happened? I had to go to my next round and my opponent's like, dude, what's wrong? I'm like, I don't have a deck. And he's like, can we get an extension? The judge came over. He's like, no, sorry, man. You just, the rules are the rules. So that guy was really nice. You know, reported it to Jared, the SCG guy who was there, called the Collinsville Police Department, you know, filed a police report, went through a whole big rigmarole. And, you know, just for a few months after, just kind of woke up at those moments like, what the hell? Somebody like snatched my deck. It just sucks. And so I do appreciate when TOs go through the process of like, you know, giving your, you know, wristbands and, you know, tagging bags and checking things. I think that's just a really, really good level of security that didn't used to happen at these events, you know, whether it was a Grand Prix or whether it was just an SCG event. So it's not going to get better overnight. I know that, but hopefully you'll get a little bit of money from the insurance company and the community will pull together, hopefully, and help you out and get your SCG Invitational deck back together for you.
Well, and I know my local store will help out. You know, there, I wouldn't call myself an amazing customer by any means, but I know they'll do what they can to help out. Beyond that, and I've heard the, you know, I post on Facebook, I contacted all the local shops. I think the thing that kind of drives me the most nuts is I can almost guarantee that that $4,500, and granted, this was SCG because I was putting the list together today, probably in a ditch somewhere because they opened up the backpack, said, oh, there's no electronics in here, and threw it in a dumpster. I actually even went around to all the dumpsters just kind of hoping. Luckily, I mean, for better or worse, I had a couple expeditions in there. I had, you know, Korean foil Liliana Last Hope in there. If somebody comes in with a collection like that, it's pretty identifiable. So I'm hoping that somebody will try to go to one of the magic shops locally and sell it. And they all have a list of what was in there and they can easily identify it. So, yes, I know. Don't leave your magic cards in the car. I've heard that 50 times, but I'm usually very, very careful about putting stuff either in my trunk or something, but we just ran everything out because I said, hey, I'm already sweaty and gross. I just never would think that would happen in a million years.
Well, your problem wasn't that you left magic cards. It was that you left a coat in the door frame.
That's the only thing I could figure because I'm like, how did I leave this unlocked? That just doesn't happen.
Hopefully everyone will come together and realize that theft is unfortunately a problem in the community at some points, whether it's someone in the community or outside of the community. If you recognize a collection, if you recognize key cards, don't be afraid to speak up. You can really be helping someone out. Matt, hopefully everything comes back together for you ahead of that. I don't know if everyone knows, SCG Invitational, you're still qualified for, even after that happened over the weekend. Guys, two tournaments to get to. They were both team limited. GP Denver, there's no problem in the Mile High City. 506 teams got together. Baugh, Dobbin, and Tenjum knocked off Ayers, Ye, and Rolf. And then at GP Nagoya, Team Limited, 664 players. Yukihira, Sato, and Yamamoto defeated Hosokawa, Mihara, and Shimizu. It's always fun to play with your friends. It's got to be especially fun to work together in Limited. We had the opportunity to do that in Minneapolis this summer, and it's one thing that I hope we do get to do again. That brings us up to this week's news and topics. A couple of different things that we want to cover this week. There is some Magic Story news. There was a WotC survey that was out today. But the first thing that I want to jump to is now that Guilds of Ravnica has been out for a little while, the new mechanics have been fleshed out, whether it's been in draft, whether it's been in constructed. And we've all gotten a chance to play with the signature mechanics from Guilds of Ravnica. What have your guys' impression of those been? Rank them for me from worst to first. Undergrowth, Mentor, Surveil, Convoke, Jumpstart. Those are the five guild mechanics. Matt, give me your worst to first.
So my initial reaction was that Undergrowth was going to be the most powerful because it relied upon, you know, like the graveyard that is was very hard to interact with at the time. At this point, I think Jumpstart's most powerful. I think the second most powerful is Surveil. I would actually go with Mentor, then down to Convoke. And Convoke and Mentor are really fighting for that. And then I'd say the least powerful is Undergrowth. I've got to put a little bit of a caveat on that where if you have a repeatable Surveil a la the big demon, that makes it look much more powerful than it is. But I think Jumpstart, especially in the colors it's in, if it was in other colors, it wouldn't be as good. I think Jumpstart is just awesomely powerful. I hope that maybe in the last block of this the Ravnica set that they go back and they do some cards from all the different guilds. Because we only that last one is supposed to be kind of an unaligned guild portion. But I hope they do some more Surveil cards because it's really, really cool. And I hope they do some more Jumpstart because it is also really cool.
All right. Matt says Jumpstart best, Undergrowth worst. Brian, you got a worst to first list. Right? Matt went most powerful to least. That's how his mind thinks. Best first, then last. I get that. What's your list?
I have to agree with Hurley. I definitely think Undergrowth is at the bottom of the list. I just think that, you know, you look at that mechanic and yeah, Hurley, I agree with you. It seems like it could be powerful, but when you just kind of look to the graveyard to count things, you know, then and it kind of puts counters on things, it's not kind of like it reduces casting cost, card types, anything like that. It's just for creature cards and it's kind of like, eh, that doesn't seem all that great. And I just don't think it's going to, I think that's going to stay at the bottom of the list. My number four right now is Mentor. I think the 3-4 is a little wonky, but Mentor to me does not seem to be as powerful as it could be. This could take off in a completely different direction in 2 to 3 weeks as people keep brewing with this, but I've got Mentor at 4. 3, I have Convoke. Now, this is the only kind of evergreen mechanic that has been printed before, so I kind of put it squarely in the middle because it's a known quantity. People understand what to do with it. It fits very, very well into the Selesnya scheme. So I've got that at 3. And I have switched my 2 and my 1. I think Jumpstart is a solid 2 right now. It is gaining, as Matthew said, in popularity and in power level. But I think far and away, Surveil with cards like Doom Whisperer, it's just the most powerful thing you can be doing in Standard right now. So worst to first, I've got Undergrowth, Mentor, Convoke, Jumpstart, and Surveil as my top choice.
Okay, it's interesting because we're agreeing on a few things and we're going to disagree on one key one, but we're going to describe it the same way. I've got Undergrowth as 5th. To me, it's powerful, but it just requires too much setup compared to the other guild mechanics. I've got Mentor at 4. It's good. I think it just suffers from being a good player in a very powerful block. It's just not as good as the other things here. Convoke. This is solidly number 3 to me. You said it. It's a known quantity. What it means is that it cheats your mana and it even lets you ignore summoning sickness. You have to realize it might only be number 3 out of 5 on this list, but in the greater ranking of mechanics that have been viable in Standard, this is still way toward the top, which tells you the top 2 are just absolutely berserk in my mind. I've got Surveil as my definite number 2. It is excellent. And that's only because I think Jumpstart is not just good, it's towing the line to broken. And the reason I say that is because every card that has Jumpstart no longer has to be valued as an individual resource. Everything with the words Jumpstart printed on it is now automatically a 2-for-1 if your opponent wants to interact with it. I'm not going to go into specifics about why I think Risk Factor could be the next Smuggler's Copter and have to be banned immediately because that card is just ridiculous. But Jumpstart, I don't like the line of gameplay that it encourages. You no longer have to value your resources. You can just spam everything out because it's an automatic 2-for-1. No matter if you get the result you want or not, your opponent has to spend 2 resources to deal with just the 1 card. And I think this mechanic is more than just towing the line of broken right now. We'll see how this actually ends up playing out. 2 hyperbolic Is this something you've noticed as well? Even something as seemingly innocuous as Chemister's Insight, not as good as Glimmer of Genius, or is it even better because you get to cast it twice? Yes, it might cost you an extra land, but the decks that are typically playing this are 27 land control decks.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, just being in these colors, Chemister's Insight is just... I'm so glad they did not put a jumpstart card on a counterspell, because that would have been the most broken card in the set. And I know at some point they tried it. I'm sure at some point they tried it.
I just threw up in my mouth.
Had jumpstart at some point.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Ionize jumpstart would be a $40 card.
Oh, yeah. But I agree with everything you said. There's also some really cool interactions with some like the Drake that's 2 red and 2 blue. Mm-hmm. And you count stuff that's in exile. If you're playing that in an Izzet deck, and people are going up and down on it, but you're playing that in an Izzet deck, you get to cast your spells twice and then still count them for the Drake. I think there's little interactions like that. Another one is Azor's Gateway. If you mm-hmm. exile it with Azor's Gateway, when you're drawing cards, it counts for the Drake. I'm glad there's no broken cards with Jumpstart, except for maybe Risk Factor. And I think that's the most one, dangerous one. If these other cards had Jumpstart, I think that's just a broken mechanic.
Ryan, we've got 5 guilds that we haven't seen the keyword for yet that are coming up. Should we want mechanics that can rival Surveil and Jumpstart, or would that just put Standard in too bad of a place?
This is always the issue that R&D's got, right? This is kind of balancing card power versus mechanics power, you know, design. We can all agree that Phyrexian Mana was just a bad idea top to bottom. And Wizards has responded, you know, albeit slowly, but they've responded to that. I feel like it was kind of a great thing. It's kind of fun to push the edge of the envelope with something like Surveil or Jumpstart. You know, you never want to see things just kind of crash and burn like Undergrowth. Mentor, I think, is really cool. It fits perfectly into the Boros guild. It's got the flavor that you would want. Convoke, I thought it was kind of like, well, yeah, it's exactly what it should be, but we've seen it before. And man, why did Selesnya get the shaft? So is there going to be one of the 5 guilds who gets the shaft next time? You know, is Gruul going to get just, you know, is it going to be Blood Rush again kind of thing? Or, you know, is it going to be something else? I would hope that they would kind of balance out the powers of the mechanics, still make it flavor worthy. But I don't think I want it too overpowered, because then it just becomes, oh, let's just accumulate all the cards that have this very powerful mm-hmm. mechanic. It doesn't really matter what they do. It's just you get so much recurring value from them that you're going to win a lot of games.
What's your top 5? Hit us up, thetryhards3@gmail.com. There's another story to be told, and it isn't necessarily the one that WotC is telling us with the cardboard. Guys, did you see this announcement? WotC is now encouraging its authors to careen off onto stories of their own choosing. WotC is going to direct their Magic story authors that they can take the story to locations not being represented currently in gameplay. Matt, you've been part of the big revival in Magic story. Do you like the idea that they're encouraging authors to take us away from planes that are currently being featured?
I do, actually. I also like that you can expand upon the, I guess, the supporting characters. Those supporting characters can be, you know, people on the street that see these planeswalkers fighting. I mean, it's kind of like the news reports you see on the MCU movies, like when the Avengers, when they're talking about how much damage they did and all this stuff. I want to see those point of views. And on the flip side of that, if somebody comes up with just an amazing idea, new planeswalkers or something, new planes even, if you want to go crazy with it, WotC can then utilize that. You'll help their design department, help their creative department. So I think it works both ways, and I think it's nothing but good.
Brian, how far along are you on your story?
Just chapter 5. You know, it's got to go through a bunch of edits. So I will share as soon as it becomes available and ask for your guys' input, of course.
All right. You can find that at brianfanfic.com, I think is what he has.
You got it. You nailed it.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll look forward to that.
Is that going to be an adult website here in about 30 seconds now?
You know our listener base, so yes.
30 seconds in the past is what you mean. If you've thought about it, it's already porn on the internet. That's how that's the internet law works. So we're just here to enforce it. We're not trying to change the laws in any way. If you were on the mothership today is Monday, October 15th, as we record this episode of Tryhards, you had the opportunity to take a wizard survey. Now, each time a set comes out, they usually ask you about your reaction, and it's your chance to give them feedback. Today was a little bit notable because they were asking about coverage, and this has usually been a hot-button issue. I took the time to take the survey, and a lot of my answers, where they wanted you to write something, consisted of these words: not enough characters to go into detail. And then I just attached my DCI number to it and sent it to them. Wizards, I'm ready to give you feedback if you want some on a adult level. Did you guys take this survey? What was your initial reaction? Is it good that WotC's asking for feedback? I think it is, Brian. Are they receptive to what they may find? Because we know Magic players tend toward the negative knee-jerk reaction when given these opportunities.
I am always in favor of Magic and WotC in general wanting to get feedback from the community, because they don't shy away from it. That's the one thing I can always say, is they'll always, you know, ask for it. And sometimes the overwhelming tidal wave of negativity comes washing over them, and they're kind of like, okay, I guess we screwed up and sorry and blah, blah, blah. I like that they put themselves out there and are willing to take it. I also feel like, are we asking the question a little too late? I mean, it's not like they can let go some of their personalities and do a complete overhaul of the people who they've kind of contracted with for a very long time. Or do you think that that's kind of what they're doing? Because I'm really happy with the Riley Knight. I'm really happy with Tim Willoughby. I'm really happy with, you know, some of the other guys that they have in the booth. I love the Reed Duke experiment, even if it just kind of is that. LSV showing up, Maria Bertoldi is great. And yet people are always like, oh, but they're not Cedric and Patrick. Oh, but they're not Cedric and Patrick. And if we set it up just for that, for these two personalities that kind of have their niche in SCG lore, I don't think we're ever going to win an argument about that, about like Wizards has bad coverage or Wizards has good coverage. I think it's just two different types of coverage. So I couldn't really figure out exactly what they're trying to shoot for. Do we want to try to mine more talent and get more characters on camera? Absolutely. And if they can kind of try to go to the quote unquote minors and find that talent and work their way up, yeah, I'm all for it.
The simplest way I can try to break this down in shorthand is Cedric Phillips and Patrick Sullivan on the Star City Games circuit. They're the equivalent, because if you watch that, you see them so often, of your hometown baseball broadcast. You just get to know their ins and outs. You know their rhythms. You know what their hot button issues are. When Magic puts together its team for the Pro Tour, that's like watching a National Football League broadcast that's on a major network carrier. You're not going to get the hometown insight. You're going to get a more glossy production, but some people will tell you that that lacks familiarity and a little bit of grit. It's just your preference. Neither one's right or wrong. It's just two different outlets that are going for two different presentations each time they do their coverage thing. So I don't think one's necessarily better than the other. We can get into style all day, but style doesn't mean, Matt, right or wrong. You can ask people what they prefer, and you might get ham and you might get turkey. That doesn't mean the other people are necessarily wrong. Or do you think there's something deeper going on here?
I think there's something maybe a little bit deep. I agree with Brian in the sense that you can't just dump people, you know, especially there's contracts, there's legal obligations. I want to know that what we're giving them is actually being used. And this was one of the big complaints that Jerry Thompson had, was that, hey, we've given them feedback, whether it's on coverage, whether it's on something, and they don't seem to take action. I mean, taking this survey, I'm just like, okay, this is going to go into the nether void of nothing. And I think a lot of the improvement problems fall on the community. Because here's a case in point. SCG had, I want to say, a picture on their SCG tour, and it was on their Twitter or something this week. It was of four people playing Magic, and there were some very, very hateful comments in that, including about the sex of the players and about the orientation of the players. stuff that had nothing to do. They just said, come play on, you know, it was their general banner, come play on the Magic Tour. And until we self-police a lot of that, I don't think you're going to get a true representation from those surveys of what people want, or you're going to get a true representation until they can, you know, take an anonymous portion of it off the internet. I hope that they can read this and they can kind of read through the garbage to say, okay, here's what we can do to improve. I'm just hopeful they can do something. I don't have a good solution for it at this point, though.
That broadcast will be on display coming up on November 8th. That's the beginning of the next Pro Tour. Now, if you're a calendar mathematician, you're going, wait a minute, Sean, that's a Thursday. They don't start till Friday. Well, the 2017-2018 Player of the Year showdown between Seth Manfield and Luis Salvato is going to be Thursday, November 8th at the Pro Tour venue. That's Cobb Galleria Center in Atlanta, Georgia. That'll be the day before Pro Tour Guilds of Ravnica. They're going to start that day at 3 p.m. Eastern. That's 12 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. UTC. We're big in the UTC time zone. And that'll be streamed on twitch.tv/magic. Now, here's the twist that they've come up with for this one. And I want your two's opinion on this. Is this too convoluted, or does this have you salivating? Seth and Luis will submit four different standard decks without sideboards, and then they will use those four decks in a single elimination style format, even though it's a best of seven showdown. You're like, wait a minute, single elimination, best of seven. Each deck will be single elimination. For the game one match, Seth and Luis will each select one of their four submitted standard decks. Once a deck wins, you have to set it aside and move to one of your next submissions. So the player that wins the best of seven will record wins with all four of their standard decks. Now, here's the twist. Those four standard decks can only have a non-basic land overlap of, I believe, 8 cards. This is going to test not only your magic theorizing skills, but also the depth of this standard format. This seems very interesting to me, albeit convoluted. The easiest way to understand it, each one has four decks. If you win with one, it gets thrown out. You got to use your other three. Last man standing wins, and you won't get any of your wins with the same deck twice. Too convoluted of a format, or ultimately compelling enough to get people to watch?
If they broadcast this, and they say, well, come watch this, and they properly market this event, I think it's really cool. I hope they've done some testing, a little bit of tweaking behind the scenes so that we don't get kind of like really, I guess, really strange things happening. But I think it's really, really cool. You have to market it. Everything I read moving forward from now should have this date on it. Every banner should have this. And you have to make sure people are tuning in, because this is going to be one of those one-offs. You know, we've talked in the past, it's not a good representation of the game. I think this is a good representation of the game, because you're going to see people have to go really deep into the well to say, okay, I need to build this deck.
Brian, the format of no sideboards, one game per deck, seems to dovetail with the new Arena platform's most popular play mode. Coincidence or conspiracy?
It's conspiracy all the way for me. You asked the question, is this too convoluted or is it compelling? I think it's both. I really do. I love the fact that we're going to get to see four different games, you know, with different cards and decks and things. I also think it's just way too convoluted, because to ask these players to do this as they're trying to prepare for the Pro Tour, which is, you know, okay, they have to get their standard deck ready with sideboard and try to plan for booster draft. And now they're being asked to build four different decks that, as you said, can only have X amount of cards similar. Just the logistics alone are a bit too much for me. I felt like there might have been an easier way to do this, and it takes the onus off of them. After this playoff, either these are going to be the sharpest, most acute players in the room, and you better watch out because they're going to be gunning for the winner's table and at the Pro Tour, or this is just going to take so much out of them that they're just going to be like little blobs of jelly and are going to be just worthless trying to play the rest of the Pro Tour. So I feel kind of bad for them that they have to go through so much to get ready for this. And yet, at the same time, you know, they're going to be up for the challenge because it is the player of the year.
Neither one of these gentlemen, as great as they are, Luis and Seth, are on my short list of picks for our Pro Tour Pick'em for that weekend because of what they're going to have to wade through on that Thursday. We'll see how this plays out. You know, if one of the tryhards was in a winner-take-all player of the year showdown, he would have an honor guard to carry his decks to the arena. In fact, he's already got them in the elevator this week. Matt, what's going on in there?
I really like Takatli Honor Guard. There's a few Enter the Battlefield triggers that are going on, and I think we just need a couple more to really push this card over the edge. I mean, this card's like 30 cents. It's a bulk rare from Ixalan. You might as well pick some up because one sideboard and it'll pop up over $2 real easy. So pick those up at under 30 cents or so, or pay somebody a buck for four of them.
I want to get an Ultra done of Takatli Honor Guard riding a Phyrexian Dreadnought. It just seems that those two things were meant for each other. Our brewmaster's still got a few more days in his customary brew shop before changing locales. What do you have for us?
I was watching a Gabriel Nassif video on channelfireball.com this week. Hurley, I had you in mind when I was watching this because he's playing Modern, and I know that one of the decks that was kind of on your short list was the white-black tokens deck, and while this is not really a tokens deck per se, it had a lot of cards in there that I know that I like and are near and dear to your heart as well. And one of them I wouldn't have naturally picked, but it's a card that I find very intriguing, and I know that we've all played with this before, but I just want to get your fresh, hot take on this, Tryhards. So the card I'm talking about is Tide Hollow Sculler from Sean's very favorite block, Shards of Alara, way back when. This is a 2/2 artifact creature zombie for one white and one black. When Tide Hollow Sculler comes into play, target opponent reveals his or her hand, and you choose a non-land card from it. Remove that card from the game, and when Tide Hollow Sculler leaves play, return the removed card to its owner's hand. Sean, let me start with you. These kind of take and replace effects when it leaves the battlefield, a la Kitesail Freebooter, are these cards that you're interested in brewing with? And if so, what would you do with this, namely our artifact friend Tide Hollow Sculler?
Well, it was interesting because I played Dead Guy Ale in Legacy for a while that this card was a staple part of. Here's the problem. You now have so many efficient answers. And I know it seems like we use this card as a crutch on this cast all the time, but Fatal Push. Fatal Push is now legal in every format, in which Tide Hollow Sculler is legal in as well. There was a time when in order to trade efficiently with something like Tide Hollow Sculler, you had to give up a resource in return, whether it was life with Swords to Plowshares or a basic land with Path to Exile, or you had to at least trade efficient mana or give up, say, a Lightning Bolt, which could have gone to the dome. So in essence, it gained you three life. Those days of trading for equity, I think, are over. And that's why decks like Dead Guy Ale and Legacy and a similar style deck in Modern, where the format can be just as fast and you don't have some of the stops on it with the free spells that you can't afford two mana for a card that will ultimately give your opponent their taken card back if they deem it worth that value. So as much as I love Tide Hollow Sculler, and if registered, I'm going to go with it because I haven't checked under the hood in Legacy before, I just think its day may have passed us by.
So I think the only place left for this, and this is because of all the concerns that Sean brought up, is if you're putting it side by side with Eldrazi Displacer. Because of the formatting on that card, you can put the trigger on the stack, then you can blink it, and then the card will never be returned. I think that that's where this card belongs. I think in the tokens decks, it's a fine card, but like Sean said, it's just not that efficient. Yeah, I think you need ultra efficiency at this point within the different formats. It still has a place, but I think that place is next to like Displacers and Restoration Angels and things of that nature.
This is a card that I think shines when you have a deck that's built around just kind of shredding your opponent's hand. So in the kind of decks that utilize Inquisition of Kozilek and Thoughtseize, Hymn to Turak in Legacy, this is a card that can just complement that. But as just kind of a vanilla creature coming down and maybe taking something out of their hand on loan for a while, let's say, before it will invariably get either Lightning Bolt, Fatal Pushed, or some other removal spell take care of it to return that card to your hand. It just kind of, you know, delays the inevitable. So it can give you value, but it can also give you that sense of it's giving you too much value, because when your opponent gets that back, I think that's where this doesn't really shine as brightly as it wants to in its underground cavern, as it kind of pulls its way around in its kind of gross boat. If you've seen the artwork, you know what I'm talking about.
Tide Hollow Sculler, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. All right, guys, what did we do to get better at Magic this week? I'm going to hit lead off here. The girl was out of town this weekend. I had a chance to drink some beers, stay up way too late, draft on Arena. As I mentioned earlier, the two worst draft decks of maybe my Magic career. But I found myself spiraling downward at one point and just shouting at the screen. And not that my opponent was doing anything wrong, but it was just frustration. And I took a moment to remind myself, you have to disassociate the personal from the performance. Just because you had a bad draft or you drew six lands in a row in a 20-land deck, that doesn't mean you're a bad Magic player. Your deck might not be performing well. It was just that moment that reminded me, separate the performance of the deck from an idea of personal worth based on how that game ends up being. I know a lot of people who deal with this. It's tough. You play online, you have that veil of anonymity. There tends to be sort of the digital version of road rage, you know, when the shuffler just isn't on your side. And it can be easy to let yourself landslide it. And one of the things that I have mentally used to keep myself in a better place is envisioning an actual person playing cards with me. Because I don't know if anybody's ever told you, I am lovely to play against in person. It's only when I'm behind a computer screen that I can sometimes give into my baser nature and get a little bit ragey. So just imagining playing a card game with one of my guys I see at the shop, with Matt, with Brian, tends to keep me not only in a better mood, but it keeps me more focused on the game that I'm playing rather than on getting upset, which keeps me more focused and gives me a better outcome. So if any of those things help you, please steal them, use them. And if you've got any better tips, I'd love to hear them too. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Kudos to you, Sean, because I think that's a great point. I don't think we give ourselves enough credit sometimes, is, you know, everybody's got those days, and to separate the play from the personal, I think that's really fantastic. Mine is actually a little similar, because I was getting a lot of guff from some of the players in the group, like, Tibbetts, we haven't seen you. You haven't been out. You haven't been playing. You know, rusty old man, what are you doing in your basement over there? Ha ha. Things of that nature. And it's true. I kind of got a little bit down. Kind of like, haven't been able to do stuff, haven't, you know, get the cards out, haven't been able to practice. And yet people are still emailing me and texting me and, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? Hey, is this a good choice to have in the sideboard? And I love that. I love being part of the community, even when I'm not actively playing at tournaments, because the conversations about cards, the conversations that are ever ongoing, I think is what keeps me so interested in this game, because it forces me to think about ideas and about certain things and to stay tuned into the metagame, whether I realize it or not, because, you know, somebody will mention something. Well, what about this card? Oh yeah, it's a great point. I hadn't even thought of that. This card might actually be really, really good against that. And if we're seeing a lot of that, then yeah, go for it. And I think that kind of connection from afar, shall we call it, is something that we don't value enough in the community.
Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
So I got to give a shout out at this point, because I think I learned more about this bug deck I've been playing with Michael. And like I said, we'll have that up on the Patreon page here soon, but it's up on YouTube. And I got to give him a huge shout out, because I learned a ton from him. Sean, I think you were in the same boat as me with that. I learned a ton from playing it in paper. I can't wait to reassemble the deck. And I also learned to always make sure you lock your car. Those are the three things I learned when I did to get better at Magic.
No, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Tryhards. Hopefully it doesn't take you 5 rounds of losses to figure out this might be a good podcast. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.